It's Tuesday at 8 p.m. and you're listening to The Best Possible Taste on West Limerick 102 FM.
You're listening to The Best Possible Taste on West Limerick 102 FM.
Now, I met tonight's first guest last year when I was part of a team delivering the Sustainable Food Tourism Experience Development Training Programme funded by Taste for Success SkillNet. Peter Monaghan is Cavan born and bred and has a farm with a difference. Let's find out more.
Bon appetit.
Yummy.
Grubs up.
Delicious.
Peter, you're very welcome to The Best Possible Taste. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me today. You're a farmer up in Cavan, but you're a farmer with a difference. So tell us about the farm that you have there.
Darren, thanks very much for having me on. Yeah, my name is Peter Monaghan from Virginia, County Cavan. I currently run a snail and suckler herd, which is probably a little bit strange to some people, but...
So just for the benefit of listeners, yes, they did hear you say the word snail. So you have a snail farm and then you have a suckler herd, which people are going to be more familiar with.
Yeah, well, yeah, I grew up here. We've a small farm here on the border of Meath and Cavan, just beside Virginia here. And yeah, I would have grown up on the farm here. You know, I've lived here all my life. We've always had a small suckler herd, but... I suppose suckler farmers will know it's pretty hard to make a daily wage out of a suckler farm. So from the very early stages, from I was 10, 11, 12, really fell in love with the farm, but you know, was always made quite aware that the farm would never be my full-time job, okay? But I still always had that dream of working from the farm, really. And I remember really young, I wanted to kind of get into dairy, and I was looking at sheep and a few different things. But, you know, stuck with my college, stuck with school and all that stuff. And began working in the transport industry, worked there for 15 years. And I found it always really difficult to leave the farm, even though we weren't really making much money from the sucklers. So honestly, in about 2011, 2012, I would have came across snail farming, or heliculture as they call it in Europe. And I remember it hitting me like a ton of bricks. You were able to farm such a high volume of meat or snails from a very small space of ground. And that was the key for me, because we hadn't got a very large farm. So, yeah, after coming across snail farming in 2012, 2013, I actually conducted 2 or 3 years research of my own, both here in Europe and in Ireland. And the more the more research I conducted, the more I became more intrigued and more interested in snail farming. Now, I suppose in 2016, 17, after conducting lots and lots of research, putting so much hours into it, keeping in mind that I was working a full-time job, I felt like I had hit a brick wall in about 2016-17. So took the delve into actually ordering 750,000 juvenile snails. And as they say, the rest is history after that. I learned so much about snail farming in my first year, after, I suppose, farming my snails in 2017-2018. Yeah, things have just gone on leaps and bounds since then.
Well, let's go back for a minute to the family farm. Do you have any siblings that are involved in farming there?
Yeah, the lads, I'm the oldest of four. So my brother Stephen, I've Paddy, then Paddy's the second youngest, and then we actually have Anthony. He's the baby of the family. He's there's actually 21 year age difference between me and Anthony. But no, the lads never had much interest in the farm, to be honest with you. Unfortunately, our dad died when we were pretty young, in 2006. He was only 46, and we all put our shoulders to the wheel, and we kept the farm going there, together. But I seem to be the only one then that had that kind of a, I suppose, connection and interest to help the farm move forward. And thankfully, yes, with their help, it has become a sustainable way of farming and actually a full time living for me now, thankfully.
Sorry to hear about your dad. It must have been tough losing him whenever he was.
Very tough.
And, you know, you obviously stepped into the breach there and all the jobs and everything that he was doing. You took them over and you mentioned that you were working full time as well. Were you working full time in the transport industry?
I was working full time. Something that I did have a great passion for, absolutely. But honestly, it was almost like when I was leaving here every day, and I didn't have to travel too far to work, but it was almost like there was a hand grabbing me to bring me back here. I had so many opportunities through football and I got a couple of scholarships, offers, didn't take them. I had the opportunity very early on to actually go and play in America. I had so many opportunities, but I never went anywhere. I was always the home bird. I was the only one that didn't really travel. So I always felt that kind of connection to the farm. And it's amazing, you know, being told for so many years, you know, you need to get out and work and you need to be, you know, the farm is just a pastime type of thing. You know, to see myself here working full time, albeit now tough work, it is, snail farming is tough work. But, you know, to have those voices in the back of my head that would have said, no, you're never gonna make a full time living from the farm. I'm quite proud of what I've done. And quite proud to be a snail farmer that's actually working well. So
I think you've every right to be proud, Peter. And it's interesting whenever you say the head, you kept hearing in your head, you can't make a living out of this, because that's what you were always told. But your heart was very much saying you can make a living out of this. You just need to be innovative and enterprising. And when you came across the snail farming, it sounds like there was something in your gut telling you that this was the avenue for you to go down.
Yeah, but the first thing that hits you when you research snail farming is the market. There's such a huge market for escargot. There's such a huge market for snail caviar. There's such a huge market for snail shells. There's such a huge market for snail cosmetics, snail mucin, which we're actually in at the moment. You know, so for me, when the market is there, it's up to the individual to get to that market with a viable product and a sustainable product. We're very lucky. Snail farming is probably one of the most sustainable types of farming. So, yeah, and don't get me wrong. That's not, I might as well be honest, that's not why I got into it. I got into it because I thought I would actually be able to create a full-time income from the farm. So, you know, I'm going to be honest about that. But luckily, you know, over the last 5-6 years, you become quite aware of the industry you're in. And snail farming is, I really, really believe, from visiting other farms in Europe, from having a huge network throughout Europe, even in the US and as far as Australia, I think snail farming is going to become quite popular over the next 5 to 10 years. And sustainability is going to be a huge part of that.
So it's interesting what you say about the market for it, because the consumption of snails in Ireland is, like, it's small. That's not going to surprise anybody listening.
Right.
You're talking about escargot. So markets like France and further afield, snails are a great source of protein, and they are an ingredient that people incorporate into their daily diets.
That's correct. Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, the market in Ireland is not something you're ever, look, I suppose in the next 5-10 years, maybe that might change, but I don't think it would be wise to build your business plan around a market in Ireland. It's just not there at the moment. Now, don't get me wrong, we have a small chain of restaurants. It would be more high-end Michelin star restaurants that will buy our snails at a pretty good price. But, you know, most of our snails up until last year would have always went out wholesale. And wholesale, I don't get me wrong, wholesale is fantastic. It allowed me over the space of 4 or 5 years to I suppose get paid for my product, but more importantly learn heliculture, learn snail farming, and learn how to farm snails. That was huge. So I don't ever want to sound like I'm dishing wholesale. I'm not. But look, coming up to, I suppose, 2 years ago, we said to ourselves, you know, the wholesale price is not something we really want to be fully tied in on for the duration of our farm. So believe it or believe it not, we actually got planner permission last year for Ireland's first processing plant, which I feel will be absolutely game changing to our farm here. If we can add value, as you say, to our product, you know, we can reach markets as far as Dubai, Singapore, the whole way to America, and it will completely change the value of our product. And it will also open up probably our farm to, you know, distributing different products. One being, which I'm haven't really said much about yet, but one being caviar. Caviar is something that I'm very, very interested in getting into, and it's quite a lucrative market, to be honest.
Is it snail caviar?
Snail caviar, yeah. We're putting out, honestly, we could be putting out maybe 100, 150 kilos of eggs every year, and that's very important to I suppose, focus there, that they're actually eggs, they're not caviar, because unfortunately, the eggs will only stay fresh for 2 to 3 days. We have no market here in Ireland for them, so we can't get to market quick enough with them. So what we have to do is, in our processing plant, it's kind of like a laboratory type of a setting. There's a small little process, a kind of a washing and sorting process and a preservative process, which we have to carry out all the research ourselves on, because it's not available to buy, it's not available to share. You know, snail caviar is quite expensive, so there's not many companies will help you set up, so we're having to do all this ourselves. So I suppose when we get that little laboratory going, snail caviar, I would hope would be it would be a very big part of our business. We actually have the markets there for it already, so it's just a matter of getting the processing plant up and going and delving into it.
And you mentioned sustainability, because there is a market for the shells, there is a market for the snails, there's a market for the mucus, and there's a market for the caviar. So is it a zero waste product?
It honestly, it's as close to zero waste as you're going to get. You can actually harvest the snail poo for cosmetics also and send it away. Now that, you know, I have to be realistic about the farm. At the moment we're fattening snails. That takes a lot of work. That takes a lot of work. I'm a one-man show at the minute with a couple of guys working part-time. But fattening snails is quite a lot of work. You need the snail to be able to produce all these products. It's as simple as that. We're very much based in our business around having something authentic Irish. So everything we have here is fully Irish. The mucin or snail slime we take from our snails is fully Irish. I suppose getting into snail poo or, I suppose, other markets or other products, I don't think it's realistic. We're going to try and focus on the snail fillet. We're going to try and focus on the snail shell and the snail caviar. We also have a small cosmetics business as well that we take some mucin from our snails. But, you know, trying to delve into everything wouldn't be wise. But look, yeah, getting back, I would say that 99% of everything we produce here is very sustainable, and there's very, very little waste. If you even look at our farm, our outdoor farm, our paddocks, everything is manual labor. We would really use only for maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes at the start of every year to cultivate the acre outside our tractor. That's as simple as that. Everything else is done with gas heaters inside. So, you know, I would say we're actually carbon negative, as opposed to, you know, a lot of other farms that are farming up and down the road here. But hopefully we can improve on that and down the line see ourselves being one of the most sustainable farms in the country, please God.
And tell me more about the day-to-day operation, because some of those, like snails aren't big. Everybody knows the size of a snail. They're not big. So to be going in and separating them and finding eggs and everything, it must be quite an intricate sort of job.
It is. I suppose the layout of our farm and the method I'm using is both an indoor and an outdoor method. I feel that's the only method that is suitable, certainly to ourselves here, on a commercial scale. So what our year looks like is the first week of January, when we get Christmas over us, the Christmas hangover over us, and we will turn on the breeding room, turn the lights on, turn the heaters on. And what we will do is we will wake up our hibernated snails from a hibernation room. They're snails that we would have fattened the year before. They will go into our breeding room. We will slowly wake them up with humidity and temperature, and the breeding process has begun. After about 2 weeks, we'll give the snails maybe about 2-3 weeks to breed. We will start introducing, as we call, laying pots. So they're pots full of clay. Snails will not lay, which I think is absolutely fantastic. Snails will not lay their eggs until you introduce pots. It's so controllable. It's honestly, it's fascinating. And it allows you to manage your time really well. The unfortunate thing about when you introduce pots is the labor. It just goes absolutely through the roof. It really, really does. Snails, when you give them the clay, they're going to lay. And the only problem you have then is sorting the eggs from the pots. That takes a lot of time. So, you know, this time of the year, getting into April, you're looking at a very tired, battered looking Peter. Honestly, I do start feeling sorry for myself in April, because you know you have put a lot of work into your breeding room.
What size are the eggs?
They're basically like your fish caviar. They're tiny, small little eggs, anything from 80 to 140, 150 eggs in each cluster.
Right, and what color are they?
They're white. Pearls. So in Europe, in some farms, in some industries, they will actually call them white caviar, snail pearls. And they are honestly, if you can get them into caviar form, there is such a shortage. They call them food for the super rich. But look, they are quite expensive. But when you break down the hours and the labor you put into that product, a kilo of product, yeah, it's you want to be getting well paid for it, really.
And then when you're farming cows, for example, you might have one bull to do its job.
Snails are hermaphrodites, so they have both male and female reproductive systems, which is absolutely, it's fantastic. It really, really is. Every single snail you put into that room is going to breed, and most of them will lay, which is absolutely, it's fantastic. When you give these little guys their space, give them their appropriate food and look after them. And I can't overstate that enough. You need to really look after them. You need to keep things really clean. You're in artificial circumstances when you're in a breeding room. So you're introducing heat. Snails are going to poo. There's risks of ammonia. There's risks of bacteria. You know, so you need to control everything. If I go back to my first year, my first year in snail farming as an inexperienced snail farmer, I bought my snails in, I reared them and fattened them. So I feel the other person that sold me the juveniles had most of the work done. In my second year, I decided to go and breed my snails. And hands up, Sharon, honestly, it was an absolute disaster. I cut corners. I basically put my snails into a room and I overlooked bacteria, I overlooked heating, I overlooked ventilation, I overlooked humidity. And yeah, I basically had no snails in my second year. So it would have been a huge opportunity to just completely quit. I remember in regards finance and that stuff, what I had put into it, I've always kept my costs down. But I suppose the mental aspect of, you know, how much I had put into and how much I had invested in this mentally, it really hit me like a ton of bricks. So I suppose I kept at it, did more research on breeding, improved our, I suppose, air quality, improved our heaters, put some humidifiers in there, and improved our air conditioning system. And since then, honestly, if you give the snails those ideal circumstances, they are just a fantastic little creature. They're so resilient, and when you reward them like that, they are certainly going to reward you with millions and millions of eggs. We're hoping to have approximately 4 to 4.5 million eggs out of the breeding room this year, please God.
And at what stage then do you move them outside?
This year is going to be difficult. I think we're about 4 weeks behind because we haven't even got outside to plough the field, albeit a dry field. We're kind of on the side of a hill, so the water doesn't lie there. But we haven't had a day in the last 6-8 weeks to actually spray off safely. Spray off. We use kind of an organic spray. It's like an apple cider vinegar type thing. And you don't want that flying away everywhere, damaging plants and flowers around the paddock. But we haven't actually had a chance to get out there in the last 6 or 8 weeks to spray the paddock off. I'm hoping this weekend now might give us an opportunity. Plough the paddock. It's about an acre outside. Get that all cultivated and get it seeded. So in the next 2 weeks, we would hope to get our juveniles from our incubation stage out from the incubation room into our polytunnel, maybe for about 3 weeks, just to, I suppose, build them up to about maybe 1 or 2 grams. At that stage, which I'd say you're probably talking about the middle of May, we would be fairly confident that frost and the harsh weather has gone, and we would then introduce them to the field. At that stage, really, your work has completely halved. You're really only feeding your snails in the evening, watering your snails in the evening, taking about an hour, maybe hour and a half to do those jobs. So you're having a pretty straightforward summer.
And what do you do to protect them from predators when they're outside in the field?
Yeah, I actually have a galvanized boundary. It's dug down into the ground, which is very, very, very important. I have seen a lot of experimental farms over the years get completely cleared out by rats and mice, squirrels, different things like that. So you need your galvanized buried into the ground, a galvanized boundary, or a hard boundary, as I call it. And then you also need an overhead net, because the birds are going to love the snails, especially small snails. Even the larger snails, crows and jackdaws and stuff like that, they will break in and they'll clear your field. So an overhead net and a solid galvanized boundary that rodents can't climb up is essential in the field.
Wow, like it's just all fascinating. So it is. The weather then, the Irish weather has been very unkind to farmers of late. So, you know, you talk about the frost, and obviously if they're out in the frost, that's going to have detrimental effect. But what about the rain, if it's too wet or if it's too hot?
It actually, you know, snails love wet weather, but my goodness, last summer, the downpours we were getting, can you imagine the little snail with his head out and one of those large drops come down, it knocked the poor little snail out. But anyway, the weather last year probably was a little bit too wet. We feed our snails outside with wooden feeding boards, and you can imagine yourself throwing that kind of really fine feed on the feeding boards, and a shower of rain comes, it's just going to wash it away and things become very untidy. So you kind of have that fine balance, albeit now in the summers, I want to point out that we're actually farming the Helix Asportia Muller snail, which is the Irish brown garden snail. So they're native to Ireland. They actually love the weather here. But I suppose those extreme hot days that we get, or the really, really wet days, they're like any other animal. They don't really like it, honestly. But generally speaking, up until a bit last year, it was probably, the weather has been pretty good to us, and snails have always done pretty well. You will actually find in the hotter weathers, I think there was a stage last year we had 30 days without rain here. You will see snails getting a little bit uncomfortable. Thankfully, we have ways of controlling that. We would have sprinklers in the field, and when things get too hot or too dry, we can turn the sprinklers on, and we're kind of controlling that. So, I suppose the only thing we can't control is the cold, and the only thing we can't control is the large downpours. Other than that, snails seem to do really, really well here.
Fascinating, Peter. Absolutely fascinating. If anybody wants to find out more about it, where is the best place for them to go to?
Yeah, look, we're in Inishascargo here in Virginia County Cavan, as I say. What I would advise anyone getting into snail farming is certainly not for everybody. But I would advise do as much research as possible. Go and visit. You can come and visit our farm here. We do awareness training here. We do virtual and on-farm training. We do tours here. I would suggest go and see it with your own two eyes first. See the amount of work that's involved. And take it from there. Get as much information as you possibly can. And you can visit our website, innisfiscargo.ie. We're on Facebook there, Instagram, TikTok, and those type of platforms. So look at, have a good look at things. Don't be rushing into anything. This time of the year is a really good time to visit a snail farm or, you know, I suppose, begin the early stages of your research. So yeah, don't be rushing into anything and always get plenty of advice. As I always say, see with your own two eyes first before you kind of jump into anything.
Well, look, best of luck with this season.
Thanks, Sharon.
And thanks so much for talking to me today.
It was a pleasure, of course. Pleasure, Sharon. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to the best possible taste on West Limerick 102 FM.